What's the last thought that crossed your mind? Maybe what you're making for dinner tonight or something you heard on the news just now? Whatever the thought was, how did you experience it? Did you hear it in words, or did you see it as a picture, or maybe as a series of pictures? If you saw the thought as a picture, well, you're in good, great company with our next guest. She's a visual thinker and says there are a lot of people like her who are inventors and artists and misunderstood. And in a world dominated by language, she says we need to get better at supporting people who think visually. Is this you? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. When you think about something, do you think in words or do you think in pictures? Why? What is it like to imagine thinking the opposite way? Is your school system doing enough to support different styles of thinking? 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Temple Grandin is a professor of animal science at Colorado State University. She's an advocate for the autism community and was depicted in the HBO movie about her life. Her latest book is Visual Thinking, The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. Temple, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's great to be here.
Let's start with the lack of awareness that we have about how people think differently. It should, I think, if you think about it, it should be obvious that thought is a spectrum like so much else we find in nature. Where's this lack of awareness come from?
Well, thought is definitely a spectrum. I started out my cattle behavior work, and I looked at what cattle were looking at, and things like shadows would scare cattle. Now, that when I first started doing this in my 20s, now it's a long time ago, in the 70s, I didn't know other people thought verbally. I only thought visual thinking existed. And I do a lot of talks to big corporations about different kinds of thinking and how they have different skill sets. And I tell them that the first thing they've got to do is realize different thinking exists. There can be extremes, and then lots of people are mixtures of different kinds of thought. They can either be thinking in pictures, object visualizer, or thinking in patterns, more mathematical pattern and music thinkers, or verbal word thinkers.
So you were a visual thinker, Temple Grandin, and the dominance of language thinking had a big impact on your life. Share that with us.
Well, being an extreme visual thinker has helped me with designing equipment. In fact, object visualizers like me tend to be good at animals, art, mechanical things, and photography. Art and mechanics go together. And when I was out working on equipment, I worked with a whole lot of really smart people working in the shop that were probably autistic, dyslexic, or ADHD, extreme visual thinkers, had a difficult time doing algebra, but built all kinds of mechanical devices for industry.
Temple Grandin, can you give us, and obviously I'm a verbal person, I'm verbalizing all the time, even when nobody's listening, so could you give us a little idea of what a thought is like inside your head?
It's completely in pictures. You know, when I mentioned the people that work in the shop, I'm actually seeing some of the metalworking shops I worked with. I'm seeing pictures of the people. I'm seeing some of the projects are kind of flashing up now, like a series of PowerPoint slides, or when I was younger, 35-millimeter slides.
And there are some great examples in your book, Temple Grandin, where this visual thinking comes into play in your life. And you detail how you are a NASA nerd and a space, you know, a space aficionado. And you got to visit Cape Canaveral and you got to see a SpaceX launch. But you also saw something on that launch pad that I don't think anybody else saw.
Well, that's the thing. There's two parts of engineering. There's a mathematical part of engineering where you calculate things, calculate the rocket's trajectory, orbits, getting the rocket to Mars, things like that. Then there's the visual thinking side of engineering. And we visited the launch pad. This trip was 5 years ago. That launch pad right now has a rocket sitting on it. And we were walking around under the launch pad, and I saw a little weird rapid motion, and I watched a raccoon go down a staircase and waddle into the bushes. He had been spending a night inside the launch pad. And then when I got a chance to go in there, I saw specialized equipment for rocket fueling that I don't really want a raccoon around, electrical panels, all kinds of things like that. And nobody else saw it. I saw it. And I called it to their attention. and I hope he's long gone now.
It's interesting because you see all the wires and you see all the technology, but perhaps you'll miss a little fleeting tale of a raccoon somewhere. Temple Grandin is our guest, and I just want to reintroduce you. Her latest book is Visual Thinking, and she joins us with how she thinks and how so many have thought in the past, and we just didn't even know it. What is it about the verbal-visual divide that has verbal dominating the way we talk about how we think, Temple?
Well, there's actually two types of visualizers. So the object visualizer like me, who's very good with art and mechanical things, who absolutely cannot do algebra. None of the shop guys I worked with could do algebra. And then there's the mathematical side of engineering. And in something like a big food processing plant, the mathematicians design the boilers, the refrigeration, make sure the snow and the wind loads aren't going to cave the roof in. And my kind of mind makes all of the clever equipment. Mechanically clever equipment. Think packaging equipment, for example.
But also, your relationship with the animals, and you know, you conclude your new book with animal consciousness and visual thinking, and part of that has to do with your hypothesis that the tendency to perceive animals as completely other increases as verbal thinking predominates in both individuals and cultures. And that rang true to me, especially when I see people walking their dogs and dogs being yanked on their leash while they're just trying to smell a fire hydrant. Yeah, that made sense to me, Temple.
Well, an animal is sensory-based. I mean, the dog has a great smell world, for example, and it's a sensory-based existence. Now, I've worked with my great co-author, Betsy, who's totally verbal, and I learned a lot more about how she thought. I'd write rough drafts, and then she'd straighten them out and make them much more linear. But I think that if a person's an extreme verbalizer, I think they have a hard time imagining thought without words, whether it's mathematical kind of visualization or picture visualization like me. And some of these arguments now about consciousness in a dog, for example, some of the people that still might not think a dog is truly conscious probably are extreme verbal thinkers. And lots of people are kind of middle road on different kinds of thinking. They're combinations. I discuss animal consciousness, and I just read a trippy, trippy paper after the book went to press done at Cornell University that the dog has an internet circuit from the nose to the visual cortex. And I'm going, wow, smell pictures? He smellulizes, and the smells are going to the visual cortex? That was very trippy.
It's smell-o-vision for dogs. But this, and
where
we started, Temple Grandin, and you also talk about, you know, don't pull you should recommend stop yanking dogs' leashes when they're trying to smell around a tree or a hydrant because they're communicating. It's, as you call it in your book, P-mail.
Yeah, it's their communication. And, I think the first step is realizing that different thinking exists, and we need these skills. We are actually losing skills. There's things we don't make in this country, such as the state-of-the-art electronic chip-making machine for electronic chips. That's because we took out shop classes 20 years ago. Another big mistake that companies made is shutting down in-house engineering, and that happened in the meat industry. It's coming back to bite them right now. But right now, if you want a new poultry processing plant, how about 100 shipping containers from Holland? Well, we're paying the price for taking the hands-on classes out of the schools.
And
Holland did not do that.
So, and to go back to animals for a second, before we move on to education, and as you refer to it, the failure to launch for kids who may think differently than is commonly accepted, that we talked about thought as a spectrum, but to get back to animals for a second, Temple, consciousness could be a spectrum as well then, correct?
Well, there's visual consciousness, there's verbal consciousness. But the thing is, all I can say is that there's some people are mixtures of photorealistic visual thinking, object visualization like me, the mathematical pattern thinking, and thinking in words.
Yeah.
I'm an extreme object visualizer. For me to think about something, I have to have a picture. And if you want to kind of get an idea of how I think, why don't you give me a keyword? And don't give me something that commonplace that most people can visualize, like house or car.
All right, Rubik's Cube.
I'm seeing it. I'm also absolutely couldn't do the Rubik's Cube because that's pattern thinking.
Okay.
But I see it, and I've also seen it disassembled and what it looked like disassembled.
So would we have a better understanding? Do you think, Temple, we would have a better understanding of animals if we had a better understanding of visual thinking?
Well, the first thing is you have to realize that visual thinking exists.
Yeah.
I have talked to a highly verbal person that got her first dog, and it taught her so much. I said, watch what your dog does. What is he attending to? And she got a lot more insight into nonverbal thinking, watching what her dog does when it was running around in a field.
It makes sense. We're talking to Temple Grandin, and she's an author and autism activist who's with us today to talk about her latest book, Visual Thinking, The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. And we want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Are there people in your own life who think in a different style than you do? You think your workplace could benefit from people who think differently? And if you're a visual thinker yourself, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and right now we're picking up our talk with author and advocate Temple Grandin. Her new book, Visual Thinking, The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. We want to hear your thoughts as well at 1-800-642-1234, where John and Boaz is standing by. John, good afternoon. You're on the air with Temple Grandin.
Good afternoon. I would like to try to explain the visual thinking involved with an MRI CAT scanner.
How do you go about it, John?
Well, they roll you in the magnet. It has 1.5 Tesla strength. Very, very strong magnet where all of the hydrogen atoms of your brain align north and south with the magnetic field that's in there. Then they give you a radio frequency pulse to upset those atoms, and how fast they fall back into alignment tells if it's a bone or if it's gray matter.
So are you able to do this as pictures or short movies in your head, John, or is this come to you as words? And are those pictures, is that how you were able to do this, building these CAT scanners and MRI scanners for GE?
Yes, once you learn how it works.
I very much appreciate the perspective. And Temple, are we doing enough to support visual thinkers? And how do we identify them and support the way they think best?
Well, there's two types. And I think for the how the MRI works, you're more the mathematical pattern type thinker, where I've actually had a bunch of MRI scans. And I had a big fancy DTI scanning at the University of Pittsburgh. And I have huge visual thinking trunk lines in my head, huge circuits all over my head. Now I'm seeing some of those pictures. One of them appeared in the USA Today. It was really a mind blower. But I'm very concerned about getting screened out. Since I can't do algebra, I wouldn't be able to graduate from high school today. And when you look at a lot of things that people have invented in the past, things like grain harvesting equipment, for example, that's an example of the kinds of things that get invented by people that are not good at math. You see, there's two types of visual thinking. I'm seeing smart math students being forced to do their math the verbal way, step by step, instead of letting them look at the formulas and just tell you the answers. And we need all these different kinds of minds.
Let's go to Rebecca next. Rebecca's in Newton, and she joins Temple Grandin on the air. Good afternoon.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a huge fan, Temple. I just have everything you've ever done. And I just want to...
Oh, we
it's
lost.
It's so funny that you were...
We're losing
hello?
Rebecca, but getting a siren. If you're hearing a siren right now, it's over the radio.
We've got a siren because we had a mistake on the time of the interview, and I'm in a parking lot right now instead of at home. I was told a half an hour different time.
Oh, I'm sorry, Temple. I am very sorry for the confusion today. And Rebecca, I'm sorry for the connection. Rebecca has a son who sees and thinks about math by just coming up with the answer. It's that aha moment that you write about,
and
Temple, in your book.
He needs to be allowed to do that. And he needs to move ahead into more advanced forms of math, like maybe high school math, maybe college math, calculus, algebra, Don't hold these kids back with the boring baby stuff. And they need the kind of math that's all numbers, not this kind of verbal math they're doing now.
And you're right. And this is a question that you asked to teachers, Temple Grandin, but I get the opportunity this afternoon to ask you. What would happen to some of our great scientists, inventors, and artists if they were in today's educational system?
I think it'd be a real problem. Einstein did not speak until age 3. Elon Musk, as it revealed, he's on the autism spectrum. Michelangelo was a little 12-year-old that dropped out of school. What would happen to those people today? I'm afraid they'd be just playing video games on a disability check rather than doing some of the great things they did. It's very important that young students get exposed to things. Michelangelo was exposed to great art and stone cutting tools. I myself, as a child, spent hours building kites, making things, loved to do all that kind of stuff, working with horses. Einstein, grew up with his violin, and music, I think, was also really important to him. You've got to expose kids to things. I got interested in the cattle industry because I was exposed to it as a teenager.
Well,
that's how I got into it.
When you see kids who are, addicted to video gaming or can't get enough of it, I'm curious, does that suggest perhaps a visual thinking perspective? I saw a story today about an 18-year-old boy who just recreated our entire knowable universe on Minecraft, the video game Minecraft.
Let's get beyond Minecraft and... There's been a number of kids, young adults with autism, that got off of video games fixing cars. They found out motors were more interesting than video games. This Minecraft kid needs to be exposed to mathematics and all kinds of other things that he may find a whole lot more interesting.
Temple.
And you see, mathematics and art, they go together. I made a mistake here. Mechanical things. And art go together. I made a mistake. It's mechanical things and art go together. But we need to get that child building with real things.
Temple Grandin, our guest.
Working with computer programmers.
She is the author of the new book, Visual Thinking, The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. And you can join us at 1-800-642-1234, where Colette in Eagle River is standing by. Colette, you're on the air.
Hi. I think we're keeping kids who are visual thinkers out of college. I was allowed to go to college. I'm a visual thinker, an artist, made my way through the creative arts, and I'm now retired. My son, who was profoundly dyslexic, brilliant, but the only way we could get him into college was sending him through tech school first and then transferring him in. I also have an autistic son, but he's more at home with the disability check. But he couldn't get into college anywhere because they wanted 4 years of math, including algebra, geometry, higher geometry. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get math either. I passed algebra with a D+.
Well, and it's Temple writes about...
They let them in.
You see, the problem I have with algebra as an object visualizer is there's nothing there for me to visualize. And I'm seeing too many kids getting screened out. And the thing is, I tell business people, we need these skills. I don't know if I could graduate my school today. I'd have to get into industry the back door. And I've seen a lot of smart visual people do that in the media industry. They'll get a job in the maintenance shop. 15 years later, they're project manager for a new plant addition, and they're designing and patenting equipment.
Temple Grandin, what can somebody like me, who is overly verbal, do to support visual thinkers?
The first thing is to know that they exist. Mm. It was a shock to me in my late 30s when I discovered that verbal thinking existed in my late 30s. The first thing is knowing that they exist. And they have different skill sets, and they can have complementary skills working on the same project.
It's interesting because our technical director, Sarah Hopeful, this afternoon when we were talking about this conversation, said, hey, I'm a visual thinker. But it was an aha moment that she hadn't thought about it before because we don't think about how we think. So how do we get other people to start thinking about how they think, Temple?
Well, the whole purpose of writing the book, Visual Thinking, mm-hmm. was to get people to think about this. And I have a whole chapter on skill loss. I have a chapter on visualizing disasters. You need somebody like me to design the safety systems of Fukushima, because the reason why the Fukushima nuclear power plant burned up is they had no watertight doors to protect the electrically driven emergency cooling pump from the tsunami. Engineers, mathematicians calculate risk. I can see it. They just didn't see it. Simple watertight doors, and it would have not happened.
I am curious about one of the issues that we have here in Wisconsin, Temple Grandin, are these CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. You are an animal scientist who sees the world of animals in ways that verbal thinkers like me do not. How do you see these concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, how do you view them?
Well, I've written about this quite extensively in another book, Animals Make Us Human. Some of them, the animals are too crowded. There's some things that need to be improved. But on the other hand, it's not all one monolithic thing of fadness. There's things that need to be improved, very, very definitely. And we need to work on improving some of those things.
Temple Grandin, you came to, and I thank you so much for being here today, but you came to our forum, which has to be verbal because it's all we have on over the radio waves or online. But how would I come to your level? Can I become a visual thinker if I'm a verbal thinker? How can I adapt?
I don't think you're going to take me and turn me into an algebra specialist. That's not going to happen. I think they'll know extremes of visual, verbal and mathematical thinking. I think a lot of that's innate. Lots of people are mixtures. Now, you probably, if I ask you, I'm going to assume you're at the radio station, mm-hmm. think about your own house. I'm going to assume that you can see that. Mm-hmm. Most people can. And just knowing exists. And a lot of people that are verbal can, you know, see some images. But there's where they really are different are more in the extremes, where for me, algebra was an absolute total barrier.
Yeah. And Temple Grandin, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us today and challenging us to change the way we think about thinking. Thank you.
Well, it's great to be here.
Temple Grandin, author of the new book, Visual Thinking, The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions.